Meeting started.
We'll start.
Okay, then I move
hi,
to
Ryan.
approve the minutes.
Well,
Hey, Scott.
hey, Ryan. Yeah, if I can jump in for a minute, if you're going to try to go ahead and approve the minutes or take care of a couple of agenda items, you would need to formally call the meeting to order. You know, as usual, is the board chair here?
Oh, yeah.
Yes, I just logged in right now.
Yeah.
Okay. All right.
Okay.
Sorry about that. I'm not quite at my desk, but I should be good to at least get us off and rolling. You guys hear me okay right now?
Yep.
Great. Then, so it is 3 o'clock. I'll call the meeting to order. Can we get a roll call?
Hero.
Caputo.
Yes.
Dinar.
Yes.
Earl.
Here.
Connor.
Present.
Dr. Harris and Dr. Morrow are absent.
Great. Thank you, Sherry. Agenda item number 2, review, discussion, and possible action on committee meeting minutes. So I will make a motion that we approve the committee meeting minutes from February 23rd.
Dinar, second.
So moved.
All in favor?
Aye.
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 Opposed? Motion passes, none opposed. Agenda item 3, guidelines of compliance with audit recommendations. Ryan, can you just kind of give us a quick recap of where we are responding to the audit? Ryan, are you there?
Yeah. Oh, so I may have to call. Can you guys hear me okay?
Yeah.
I can hear you.
Okay. Let me know if it starts acting weird and I'll call in. The audit had been done. We went through J-Corp, the legislature, back in February-ish at the beginning of the legislature. They always have 6-month follow-up and 18-month follow-up. The board's response on a 6-month follow-up is due April 7th. This will be on the board's March meeting. You're the only one that knows that so far, other than the board members. I'll explain in a second. So March 31st, there is an agenda, and one of the items on there will be the 6-month follow-up. We, Christina, Yasmin, and I think Sherry and I met. We went over the 22 recommendations. From our understanding, I think that we, the board, currently board and staff, currently need 16 of the 22 recommendations. The other 6 are outstanding only because there's a 2 that are followed up from this committee regarding. Let me look at my notes here real quick. Implementing policies and procedures for determining and taking enforcement actions that address the nature and severity of substantiated violations, which is what you're working on. So you have to establish guidelines when non-disciplinary versus disciplinary action is needed. And then the other recommendation is to implement a graduated and equitable system of sanctions structured so that discipline rendered is sufficient. Achieve the desired goals to protect the public, and documents consideration of mitigating and aggravating factors when determining enforcement actions. The second, all that also the second item of the, or excuse me, the second recommendation of the Auditor General, which is to review and consider licensee's history when determining enforcement action. So I think those are the only 2 things that are left. I think that we can do the other 4 remaining items. We have to wait till we're on our new database, which we were told would also be March 31st. That's now been delayed. We'll know more on Wednesday. There's a likelihood that it will at the very least start at 10:30 a.m., but we likely could still start at 8 a.m. provided we get a quorum. We're trying to establish that now. We thought we actually had the quorum established, which is why the 31st was chosen. But members have now scheduled stuff over the 31st.
Thank you, Ryan. And the kind of the third point that the committee, this committee was really focused on was the how to address prior history, which we wrapped up last time. Is that correct?
Yeah. Yasmin's got a better understanding. I feel like my head is mush right now, but from my understanding, Yasmin, correct me if I'm wrong, this committee established some sort of recommendation. Never made a formal motion to the board, but the board staff carried the recommendation anyway to the board at the March 3rd meeting, and the board voted on that recommendation March 3rd. Yasmin, is that your understanding as well?
That's correct.
Great, thank you. Then, as far as the, well, before I jump to that, I was going to start talking about the guidelines. Do any committee members have any comments or questions on anything Ryan has stated so far?
No.
Okay. Then let's talk through establishing the guidelines. And I think on page 5, board staff had circulated this document last time, which we did not get a chance to talk about. But let's just open it up to the committee. I want to hear what you guys think about what was provided.
So this is Adi. I just want to say, this is a very thorough list of a very immediately implementable list of things that we can do. I mean, I don't have any sort of major issues with the guidelines and the list that is in front of us. Maybe instead of saying additional categories as determined by the committee, we can leave that open to, if there is any additional factors that the board in any particular case wants to consider as mitigating or aggravating factors, then that is up to board, or maybe the board has discretion implement or consider factors that are not on the list. So, I mean, in other words, the list isn't exhaustive, but it's intended to capture most of the circumstances that arise in cases.
Could somebody post a list? I've seen it before, but I don't have it up in front of me right now.
Can anyone screen share that? Or Jeff, I think it's page 5 in the packet that was circulated.
Okay.
The existing board knows this, and I know the committee knows this, but every case is adjudicated on its own merits. Do we want that stated in this list of guidelines just so for the sake of having it in there, or is that understood and independent of what this list would include?
I think it's independent, Anthony.
Okay. We've got all those clever attorneys that come before us, and we don't want to say, it's not listed here in your guidelines. So to Mr. Dinar's point, I think it would be good to include language that illustrates the board's flexibility with adjudicating these cases.
Damn.
Well, I think you could take this document the way it's presented, right? So it says guidelines for adjudicating complaints. And you could just make like an opening statement, a comment with which you could say something like that. That makes sense.
Right. Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. Perhaps you could put a statement saying this list is by no means all inclusive.
Yeah.
And it says in that subsection A, not exclusive. So I guess, I mean, that does the work. So it's understood the way the list is framed that these aren't the only categories. There might be some other categories that we aren't thinking of. And the board, you know, has discretion to consider those things. But I guess, I mean, belt sense of suspenders sort of thing, I wouldn't mind if we mention those two sentences. You know, board decides cases on its individual circumstances and merits, and this list is not meant to be an exhaustive list. The board still has discretion to consider other factors that aren't mentioned in the list.
Ryan, can you make sure board staff includes those two statements into this?
Excuse me, I don't mean to interrupt, but am I the only one who's having an audio dropout from time to time on this?
I was getting it when Ryan was speaking, but other than that, I've heard things pretty clearly.
Okay, just wanted to make sure.
Suddenly, I got it just now when Dr. Hero spoke. This is Ryan. But that's question. Yeah, I heard Ryan.
Go ahead, Jeff.
Yeah, I have one other thing to consider adding to the category on the considerations. Where is it now? Anyway, what I was considering adding was whether or not this has ever been, I don't know how to describe this, discussed before, because sometimes you have a brand new issue that comes up. And, you know, sometimes I've had some prior board say, look, we're going to give you a break now because we've never done this before, but now we've got it out there. And it's the second time this comes around with somebody they knew or should have known, and therefore we're going to do something different. So I guess the uniqueness of the event, not sure how to word that. And I give you an example. Dentists are now, under some circumstances, allowed to use Botox. To my knowledge, there hasn't been a Botox case in front of the board. The first time it comes up and they say, you should have put it here, but not here, you know, do they get some kind of break for that because nobody knows?
Yeah, exactly, Jeff.
Yeah,
or if there's some criticism of the training someone underwent to do Botox, because there's no guidelines on training.
So I think, I agree with everything that Jeff said. Maybe it just falls naturally within category B, possible factors to consider when deciding whether a complaint rises to the level of discipline. And one of the factors would be, you know, the novelty or uniqueness of the situation presented. So maybe we can add that as number 12 or, you know, somewhere in between, somewhere on that list.
No, I agree. That's where I think it belongs to.
Good suggestion, Adi.
So Ryan, are you or staff getting these suggestions? We've got three of them right now that we want to incorporate into this existing document.
Yeah, we are. Go ahead.
Sorry, can I just confirm that I have the ones? This last one was number 12, to add the uniqueness of a situation presented to Section B, and the other two were those two phrases or sentences somewhere along the lines that by no means the list is all inclusive. Is that correct?
Right.
Thank you.
You know, and perhaps we should also put a thing at the top saying this list can be amended by the board at any time. It's not a static list. So it should be left open so that the board could modify it any time in the future.
Yeah, I agree. I think that's important. So with these additions, how does everybody feel about this list?
I like it.
Yeah, I do too.
Yeah, me too.
I think it's fine.
Do you want a motion to forward it to the board?
Yeah, and let's, as part of that motion, include the
changes or the additions that staff is going to make.
Yeah. As modified by the committee.
Yeah.
Okay.
So Kevin, is that your motion?
That's my motion.
I will second that. We have a motion and a second. All in favor?
Aye.
Yeah. Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries, none opposed. Okay, very good. Then, Ryan, just reread the last point that this committee needs to address.
Okay. Give me one second. So, to be honest, you may have actually addressed everything with these guidelines, because the guidelines was, I think, the bigger issue. The other one was when and how to use the historical licensees' history of discipline or non-discipline. And that kind of came a little bit wonky, because I think this committee landed on something with Seamus's review. And then when the first time we actually tried to use it at the board meeting in March, Seamus's opinion changed a little bit. I don't know if you thought the same thing, Dr. Hero.
Yeah, no, definitely. And then I was stuttering through it because of the opinion change. But, I mean, I think basically where we landed was establishing a violation with a motion before talking about the priors.
Yes, correct. And I think that's the only other thing I think for this committee. Christina and I spoke on this morning. I just want to confirm with her if she's under the same understanding. The first two recommendations on the Auditor General's report. Christina, if you stop sharing your screen real quick, I'm going to share mine.
Ryan, I thought there was one more about, utilizing the different, courses of disciplinary action, listing it. I'm pulling it up on my computer right now, but I thought there was one more. Let's see.
This is Ari. I remember, I think Dr. Morrow had mentioned something about, experts evaluating non-experts or non-experts evaluating experts. So I know that we discussed that, but I don't know if that's also part of the committee's discussion, because that might be a larger conversation. And I don't know if it addresses anything specific in the auditor's report.
Yeah, I remember him bringing that up, and I kind of felt at the time, although it was a good discussion, I don't know that it's totally relevant to the Auditor General report. Let me see.
So I just put up, these are the two recommendations that this committee was going to work on. They're the very first two recommendations of the Auditor General's report. Recommendation one is in this first row, row three, and then row four is recommendation number two, which is similarly consistent with C of one.
Yeah, it's that first one that I was thinking of, where it, work with legal counsel to develop and implement policies and procedures for determining and taking enforcement actions. Well, I guess that's those guidelines. I thought there was another one, though.
Implementing a graduated. Go ahead.
Yeah, and I guess these guidelines address all that. Right?
I think so.
Can I?
Go ahead. Christina.
Yes, this document does capture all of the recommendations within the guidelines.
Dr. Hero, we can't hear you.
Okay. I think Mr. Tonner's memo about, the potential consequences of probation, that could kind of fit in to what we're talking about here and could go to the board. Again, I don't know that it's anything for the board to
take action on, just as, but more so that to acknowledge that they're aware of it. So I guess, I guess at this point, the question is there anything left for this committee to do?
Well, I'm just sort of thinking of the probation guidelines or the probation memo that Jeff did. And there really has to be a balancing of your interest to protect the public versus what's the impact on the licensee.
Absolutely.
Because you could have egregious behavior that may have those implications but the board has got to measure and balance those interests and say, well, you know, what's more important depending on how they have articulated what the violation is and how egregious it is.
So would it be, Ryan, do you want to make a comment?
Sure. So I agree with Kevin's assessment. From my understanding, boards should have the ability in what and their first one, when it talks about discipline or even non-discipline, it says placing the licensee's license on probation. I think it's up to the licensee to know what their contract looks like, their employer, the insurance provider, or whatever, but if that means that they lose their job by getting put on probation, I don't think that our role as a board is to put people out of business or prevent them from working or being employed with their current employer. But I think that the same token, the board is looking at each case on its merits. And the last thing that the board should be doing when they're reviewing a case is how this will affect the licensee when they carry out their mission to protect the public.
I guess I agree with most of that except the last thing. I think it is something to consider. Because like I said, the last meeting, I don't know why the board would ever need to put on probation. You even use probation. But if they do, if it's so egregious, if the board says, okay, the acts were so egregious, we understand he may lose his job, but that in this case that applies, I'm fine with that.
You know, in my mind, I look at it oftentimes as we're talking about practice monitoring moving forward. That kind of encompasses a probationary period. And yeah, that's probably when I'm going to bring it up. Or recommend it, I guess, would be if we have a licensee that, you know, we feel is safe to practice, but with certain monitoring, then I think that just in and of itself is probationary, and it would probably be my recommendation to include it in the contract.
Can't you order the monitoring without probation?
I think we can do a lot of different things. I'm just letting you know what my thought process is.
Okay.
Mr. Diner, and then Ryan.
Oh, maybe Ryan had his hand up again, but thank you for calling me first. So I agree again mostly with what Jeff and Ryan said. The only concern I would have in my mind is what Jeff was talking about. You know, there might be situations where there's practice monitoring, but we aren't looking at probation. And especially the memo, or at least the information in the memo that Jeff prepared, is helpful for board members to keep in the back of their minds, because when we're ordering practice monitoring, we are doing that under the assumption that there would be a practice to monitor. And if they lose the job, there is no practice to monitor anymore. So when we are thinking of mitigating or aggravating factors, you know, maybe the thing that board members should be considering is, look, we want to have practice monitoring, let's say in a, you know, fairly egregious situation. But in order to facilitate that sort of, in order to facilitate the practice monitoring to end up being educational as opposed to punitive, we will not impose probation on top of practice monitoring. Or maybe the situation is egregious enough that we will impose probation on top of practice monitoring. So maybe that's like the degree or judgment call that might need to happen in some of these, you know, margin cases.
And I think it'll promote a good board discussion. And Jeff, it's why I asked you to kind of memorialize this so that the board does know, because I don't want to see board members making recommendations for action that maybe they don't fully understand. All right, Ryan, and then we'll go to Kevin.
Okay, thanks. So I don't know if it's Michael Rain or another attorney that has come before. It could even be Scott, who's with us today. They often say the word belt and suspenders. So it's whether this belt's holding it up or the suspenders are holding it up. The issue is, and I think that we're splitting hairs on the word probation, because technically if somebody, even though we aren't saying probation, maybe written, the word written in an order, when somebody's on when somebody's required to do CE, technically they're under probation to complete that CE or practice monitoring or whatever. But I think that the public is not, and part of what the board is supposed to do is protect the public. The public is not aware and read things are legislative session has made me change a lot of how I think, because currently the legislative branch does not believe that the board is protecting the public. And from that perspective, I would say, and I would strongly argue, that I think that unlike any board that I've worked for, never use the term probation. And I got implemented Kevin Miller and Bill Better having a deep perspective.
Ryan, you're real low right now. I think.
I'm getting a lot of cutting in and out.
Okay. I think you know what my comments are. All I'm trying to do is focus on the fact that sitting across the street during the legislative sessions that I've sat through this session, the concern, at least for the legislatures, is this board is not protecting the public. And the least concern that the board should be having is whether or not somebody retains a job. It's protecting, and if probation prevents them from being employed, you know, that's, and I'm not, I don't want to be in that position either, but I also know that the board's mission, Governor Ducey's executive order in 2017 doesn't even say the primary reason why boards exist. It says the sole reason why boards exist is to protect the public. There's not even a executive order. So that's my concern. I think that I think we should use probation. I think that everybody should go on probation. If there's a time frame listed, 3, 6, 9 months, 12 months, whatever it is, that is a probationary period of time to do X. And all you're doing is changing the status of the license to probation.
You're breaking up again.
Kevin, you want to go ahead?
Yeah, somehow this keeps lowering my hand here. I think it's hearing Ryan.
I think Ryan puts it down so he can keep talking.
I know. It sounds like you've said something, so your hand will be lowered. I was like, wait a minute. You know, and the other tool that you have on probation, and let's take, for example, not a standard of care issue. So, like, let's take the example of someone who has been found guilty of engaging in misrepresentation and billing. Or, you know, there's allegations of fraud or misrepresentation. So that's why you have a practice monitor put in place to evaluate the records, to make sure the records document the appropriate documentation for the level of care that is being submitted in an insurance submission. And you're protecting the public because essentially first of all, people aren't going to be subjected to inappropriate billing, but then our healthcare system is being protected because someone isn't misrepresenting what they do and taking valuable healthcare resources, which ultimately does affect the ability of the patient to get, to make full use of their dental benefits. But one of the things that and I haven't seen it done often, but where you would impose a suspension on someone, but you stay the suspension and they have to do certain things. And then if they are found to have engaged in the same behavior, the suspension becomes active. That stayed suspension is effectively probation. It's rare that you've used that, but we used to do it in New Jersey all the time. But there's certainly, it's among the realm of things that that could potentially be done. And it's like, it does constitute probation. I mean, you put that in the order, you know, generally you're going to say stayed to serve as a period of probation until certain metrics are done.
Jeff. Kevin, same effect. There are four things that they look at: revocation, suspension, restriction, and probation. If you put a suspended stay on there, it's going to have the same effect as probation.
Yeah, but it doesn't use the word probation.
But what I'm saying, though, is suspension is also one of the things that they kick in on the insurance companies and the possibly being fired. They're all in there. Those are the four issues.
Well, if they've been engaging in fraudulent billing, maybe they shouldn't be working for, be credentialed with the insurance company.
I'm saying there's sometimes you can do it, but the problem is I think you need to recognize that. And like Mr. Dinar said, if this is a rehabilitation thing and you think they should continue to practice, you know, why put probation in there? And again, like I said before, let's assume that you do say it's a fraudulent billing thing and you say, okay, we're going to monitor you that. And then the monitoring comes back and says they're still doing the same things.
Yeah.
Now you're going to throw the book at them. You don't need probation to do that. You can throw the book at them right now for not following the monitoring.
Not complying with a board order.
Yeah.
Well, I think, again, you know, Jeff, it's why I asked you to memorialize it, because I think the board needs to know it. And I think this will be fruitful discussions for the board when it comes up.
Yeah.
And I'm sure you'll let the board know then too, Jeff.
I would be happy to do so.
Well, good. Ryan,
Anthony,
in your mind, are we, you know, have we accomplished what this committee was set out to do?
What was the issue about substantive policy statements?
Yeah, I was going to bring that up next. I didn't want to move past the audit until we got to that. So I guess to rephrase the question, with regards to the audit, have we accomplished the objective of the committee?
I'm going to chime in for Ryan because I think he's still having problems with his internet.
Yeah, please do,
Christine. But yes, you all have you've completed what was necessary for this audit.
Great.
Thank you,
Christina. Then if there's no more discussion on agenda item 3, let's go to agenda item 4, the substantive policy statements. And I don't remember why this is on there either. Was it right? I know, Christina, at some point, their board staff recommended that we maybe do away or clean up a lot of these statements, but I don't know if that was the charge of this committee or not.
Anthony?
Yes.
So Ryan had talked about this at a previous meeting, and the issue is the substantive policy, basically the way it stands, something that has any relevance, given that when we're adjudicating complaints, we rarely, if ever, in fact, I want to go so far as to say never, look to substantive policy. And then if you look over the substantive policies, they all have a reference back to statute. So I think that's where the conversation was at, was do we need the substantive policy? And if we're going to have it, maybe we should think about codifying it into rule so that it has appropriate application and it's just not something hanging out there on its own.
Ash, go ahead.
Yeah, I agree with what Dr. Caputo said. That's what I recall where we were at. I think there may be value to going through all of the substantive policy statements. And if we want to retain some of them or some portions of some of them, we might want to think of recommending to the board that those substantive policy statements should actually become part of the rules, and then we go through, you know, rulemaking to make them part of the rules.
Don't the guidelines for adjudicating complaints effectively become substantive policy?
For now, I think they do, and you know, I think, I mean, that's the reason why these substantive policy statements come up to begin with, is they are the stopgap or measures taken in the interim. Like, you know, we are responding to the audit, and we have a certain timeline on when we can respond to it, when we have to respond to the audit. So I think eventually there needs to be some kind of a plenary review, is what I call it, where the board is looking at these substantive policy statements, which were created as a stopgap measure to see if we want to retain them. Maybe we don't want to retain them, or maybe we found a better solution to implementing something that's in the statute or in the rules. But if we do like some of the things in these interim measures, we should be thinking about putting them, you know, going through rulemaking and putting them in the rules. Or at least, I mean, that's how I view it.
Yeah, you know, and there are things that are in the substantive policy statements, I think, that are meant to be instructive to our licensees so that they understand how the board thinks about certain issues. For example, in my work with Brown & Brown on the risk management side, we get calls all the time about dismissing a patient. And whether or not dismissing a patient could be considered patient abandonment. Well, there are guidelines for the way the board considers whether there's a patient abandonment happening. Is it a logical stopping point in treatment? There's a process to notify the patient by sending her a certified and mail and regular mail and giving that, allowing 30 days to be available for emergencies. That I think is helpful to licensees so that they understand what that is. Whether that belongs in a rule, I'm not so sure. There's also a substantive policy statement on sexual misconduct. Many other states do have rules on sexual misconduct. It's a very complex topic. And it can be very controversial. You know, when I was back in New Jersey, we had sexual misconduct rules for the medical board, and for the chiropractic board, but the dental board never wanted to adopt them. So, you know, how do you adjudicate a sexual misconduct complaint? It is clearly falling under, you know, engaging in some kind of conduct that is, endangers the health, welfare and safety of the public, certainly. But it is a unique situation, which should be instructive to people that if you're going to engage in a personal relationship with a patient, you should dismiss them from your practice and have somebody else treat them. You know, that's again, instructive and valuable information, but would you put that in a rule? Yeah, I don't know. We have to see. It takes a long enough time to adopt rules now.
Addie.
Yeah, I think you bring a very good point in terms of sort of the advisory role that some of these substantive policy statements perform. And my sort of initial reaction is, and Kevin and I had this conversation just a few days ago, is some of these, at least in my mind, are sort of ethics opinions, which, you know, there's the debate out there on whether the board has adopted the ethics guidelines of the American Dental Association. And maybe there's value to thinking about some of these as some in the lawyer's profession, there are ethics opinions that are issued by the licensing body for lawyers. So, I mean, ABA ethics opinions, and then some of the, you know, Supreme Court disciplinary council issues ethics opinions in Arizona, for example. And they aren't quite at the same level as rules, but they do perform advisory or an education function that puts people on notice that, hey, you know, if these kinds of factors are present, then, you know, you still have a patient practitioner relationship with your customer, or you know, you still have to think about the sexual conduct guidelines or what have you. So, you know, maybe that's a discussion worth having. I don't know if it's in this committee or somewhere else, but I think that's a worthy discussion to have.
Ryan, is this something we could pull Jessica Thomas into? And, you know, maybe there's kind of two parts. Board staff could review and see if some of these are archaic and we should maybe just get rid of. And the second part would be ones that maybe serve a role, get Jessica's opinion on writing it into rule or leaving it as a substantive policy, and then bring it back to either this committee or straight to the board.
Yes, we can do both, Dr. Hara.
Okay, and sorry, Christine, I don't mean to keep going to Ryan.
No.
You know, I would much rather talk to you than Ryan anyway.
Hey, Anthony?
Yeah.
You know, since it was brought up, something that as you're doing some of this review and reconsideration, I might suggest that someone take some time and review South Carolina's Dental Practice Act. They did a really, really nice job of incorporating the five principles of ethics into their process. And I don't know if they were by statute or by rule, but they're there. And I think it really serves as a really nice framework. And I'm not a big person on recreating the wheel if you don't have to, but that might be a place to at least look to for some guidance with how we address the issue of ethics and maybe incorporate that into this process. So just wanted to share.
I mean, it's always great to look at other states that are doing something right. So Christina, why doesn't staff kind of take this upon themselves to start working through, speak with Jessica, maybe look at the South Carolina rules. And then, I guess my question is, do we bring this back to committee or to the board? And I think, Addie, I'd like to get your opinion on that.
So I think, I mean, this kind of discussion helps a lot. And I think as a full board, we are already pressed for time and, you know, pressed for quorum and all of those issues. So I think if we can have a substantive discussion in this committee, I think, you know, everyone is interested. I know Kevin, Jeff, Anthony Caputo, like everyone is, you know, thinking about these issues. So I think there's value in bringing it back here. And I know we have a love-hate relationship with committees, but sometimes they're necessary.
Yeah, and I think we've got a lot done in a short period of time with this one. So let's work on that, Christina, and bring it back. I'm going to move ahead then to possible action items for future meeting agendas. Anything else we want to put on? I think this substantive policy statement is going to, you know, be robust in and of itself, so I kind of hesitate to add items to the committee.
The substantive policy statement, it used to be pretty prominent on the website. I find it very difficult to find it now. Where is it?
I can send you the link to it. Recently, the website was changed, so the state went ahead and started making some changes to other boards' websites as well. But I can go ahead and find that link for you and send it out to this group.
Yeah.
Thank you, Christina.
I assume we also could suggest other policy statements that aren't there, substantive policy statements.
Yeah, I think that would be the time. I think certainly that would be relevant.
Yeah. I like that.
As far as the next committee meeting date, I have a conflict on the 4th. Depending upon what time we meet and what time it's that joint commission for national dental examiners, Christina, that I'm on. So I can look and see what time we're supposed to finish. And if it's East Coast time, so, you know, like a 3-4 o'clock meeting might work that day, but I'm going to have to double check that.
Okay. Thank you.
Yep, Sherry.
I just put in the chat the link for where the substantive policies are listed.
Great, thank you. Then if nothing else, I think we adjourn this meeting.
God, I thought we were going to take 2 hours.
Good work, everybody.
Yeah, we powered through. Thank you, guys. I'm really happy with the makeup of this committee, and I appreciate you guys making the time for it. I think we have a lot of good and different perspectives that have helped us move quickly, but also substantively.
Just call us your brain trust, Anthony.
There you go. It's the brain trust. All right, you guys. Have a great week. Thanks so much.
Thanks, everybody.